Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone. Welcome. My name is Jose Albino. You're a certified life and empowerment coach. I want to thank you for joining me today here at the Life Coach Radio Network here on Blog Talk Radio. As usual, I'm going to give individuals some time to join us before we begin. Some people will be coming from work or some dinner or some drink. So in the meantime, what I usually do, I want to set the tone for the show and reference some inspirational quotes while we wait for other listeners to join us. So I'm just usually at the beginning of my shows, what I do is reference some quotes in order to give individuals time to join us and to also simply just set the tone for the show. And the first one is, your family and your love must be cultivated like a garden. Time, effort, and imagination must be summoned constantly to keep any relationship flourishing and growing. Second one, I have three, is a generous heart, kind speech, and the life of service and compassion are the things which renew humanity. And the last one will be, there are two ways of meeting difficulties. You alter the difficulties or you alter yourself to meet them. Again, there are two ways of meeting difficulties. You either alter the difficulties or you alter yourself to meet them. So today we have a great show for you. As some of you may know that listen to my past show, they may know me personally or my work. I've been in the field of gerontology for over 15 years. And during this time, it was my responsibility and that of my staff to improve the quality of life for senior citizens and their families. So the aging community will always be flying within my spirit. So today we will be talking about caregiving, particularly for an older loved one. But I'm quite sure that the lessons and nuggets can be applied to other people in diverse situations in their lives. But I want to just know that as former First Lady Rosalynn Carter stated, there are four people in this world in relation to caregiving. They are those who have been caregivers, those who are currently caregivers, like my guest here, and those who will be caregivers, and those who will need caregivers. So there's those who have been caregivers, those who are currently caregivers, those who will be caregivers, for those who will need a caregiver, because blessedly, hopefully, we'll all get to an old age, and that's when we probably will need a caregiver. But before we begin, I just want to dedicate briefly this show to a dear friend, Paula Ramirez, whom I used to call Tiki Paula, because she was sort of an aunt figure to me and recently passed from a heart attack. She was a feisty and zesty, opinionated older woman that filled my life with lots and lots of sunshine. So I hope I did the same for her. And this one's for you, Kiki Paola. So today I have a good friend of mine, it's author Daryl Sturgis, who will candidly share his current story of being a caregiver for his mother who suffers from Alzheimer's. Remember, if you have a question for either of us, you can call us at any point during the show at 646-716-9397. That's 646-716-9397. I will definitely inform you when you can call in if you have questions. And just know that if you can't stay on for the entire hour, I do recognize that it's summertime and people are out and have other obligations. This show, you can go into blogtalkradio.com, look up Life Coach Radio Network and this show, look for this show and it will be on, as well as many other fantastic shows that are archived here on the Life Coach Radio Network. So, Daryl, thank you for being here and agreeing to share your story with your listeners. Welcome to the show.
Oh, hello, and I'm so glad that I can be here, and hopefully we can have a really interesting discussion, because I think a lot of times, caregiving and the aged sort of gets swept under the table. I think that it's a natural kind of thing that, we have a fear of aging, I think, because it reminds us of our own mortality. So I really appreciate this opportunity that you're giving me. Thanks a lot.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you for those thoughts.
Of course.
So, Darryl, a couple of weeks ago, you know, I did a show on this network, and I also talked about caregiving, and it was a great show, and it had such great feedback from people regarding the show and how it resonated with them. So, you know, obviously I decided to do another show on the topic. But what is different from this show is that while the guests, which were Sandy Gomez and Emily Lopez, they slowly talked about their caregiving experience, and unfortunately, the caregiving experience after their loved one has passed on. As such, they talked about their experience having already honored their loved one as their caregiver. You, on the other hand, I'm sure faced similar obstacles, but you're currently serving as a caregiver to your mom, and your mom is blessedly with us. So tell us a bit about your story and how you were called to be a caregiver, if you will.
Well, I mean, it's one of those kind of stories that starts, relatively innocuously. My mother is 87 years old, and around her 82nd birthday, I would say maybe within 6 months of her 82nd birthday, I started noticing, some strange behaviors. You know, she started forgetting things. She started repeating herself. So, I thought she's getting older. It became a little bit more severe as time went on. And in 2010, maybe 2011, I took her to her primary care physician after she lost her car keys for 3 weeks. My mother lived in North Carolina, and I was living in New York at the time, New York City. So I took her to her primary caregiver, and she gave her this test. She told my mother to draw the face of a clock and have it say 3 o'clock, which she did. So she said, your mother just has, some senility, age-related memory loss. I don't think that it's anything more serious. But you know how your soul just tells you that that's not the right answer, So as time went on and things became more severe, I just said, this just can't be, age-related memory loss. So I was flying back and forth from New York to North Carolina like 2, 3, 4 times a month, and I finally found a neurologist and took her to the neurologist. They gave her a CAT scan, and that's how the diagnosis happened in, I think, March of 2011 now. So I struggled for a long period of time what to do with her, Should I bring her to New York? Should I move back to North Carolina? And it was sort of like the strangest thing how I always tell people that the universe or God has a way of guiding you. A lot of times we don't listen to it. A lot of times we fight it. I was fighting it, but it just so happened that there were some unfortunate events, like that children's book, The Life of Unfortunate Events, whatever it's called. So it was like this series of unfortunate events that sort of first lead in leaving New York, coming back to North Carolina. And that's how I ended up, back in North Carolina, being a caregiver full time. And now that I'm here, it's almost providential. In my mind, it's like, this is where I should be. This is where I belong. I just thought it all those, months.
Right. Mm. So it's interesting because it sounds to me that, and you referenced it, that you really listen to that little voice inside you. You listen to your intuition and telling you, wait a minute, something is just not right, and that's what caused you to pursue it.
Okay. Yes. Okay. I think a lot of times we don't listen to that voice inside of us. I mean, I've had friends who've asked me, Darryl, how do you listen to your intuition? How do you know that what you're soul is saying is what's correct? And I said, you just have to become attuned to it. You have to work on it. You have to listen to yourself and your body and your mind and your soul. They know when you're in sync. Your life is like running water. Running water always wants to seek its level. So you kind of know when things are not right. We just rationalize them away. I rationalized. I said, she's getting older, she'll be fine, you know, things are going to work out, this can't be happening to her, you know, she's so bright, you know, my mother was a trendsetter, she was a business owner in the 70s when black women didn't own businesses, you know, she's an artist, she wrote songs, she has, you know, music that she's had copywritten, so, you know, I was in a state of denial, but it just didn't feel right.
So it sounds part of it. There was a phase where you were in denial of the whole situation that your mother was this
totally.
Your mother was. It sounds like your mother was this fabulous woman, and you were just fighting the fact that look, you know what the disease is causing, right? It's kind of like
morphing this
person in your own eyes. Okay.
Exactly.
Now listen. So cognitively, right, individuals that suffer from Alzheimer's, they live in their own little world, if you will. And that world is very removed and isolated, depending on the stage of the Alzheimer's. As such, this eludes the fact that the caregiver is left to exist within a relationship that is one-dimensional, right? Because they're often in their own little world. What are your thoughts on this, and what has been in your experience in terms of her being in her own world, you being in relationship with her, but not fully?
That's a really interesting question, because I feel that even as she grows more distant, I still feel like that there's some kind of connection, even if it's on a spiritual level, you know, with her. So her ability to speak may become more impaired. Her ability to understand things, like I said, my mother was a business owner for most of my life, and to get to a point now where, you know, she can't even count. I mean, she can't even keep up with money, so I have to pay all the bills. But you know, I don't know if it's as isolating as we tend to think. I think that we as the caregiver have to find a way to dig below that superstructure of that impairment, of that, you know, cognitive dissonance, of that, you know, because when you have Alzheimer's, a lot of times what you see is not true, it's not real, so they call you by different name. They think it's a different day of the week. They think that they're living in 1955. You know, as a caregiver, you just have to crack that and try, even if it's an eye contact, even if it's a touch, even if it's a hand hold. You know, there's got to be some kind of way to break down that barrier. I personally use touch. I touch my mother. She still can play music. So a lot of times I know that makes her happy, so I'll just sit and listen to her play. We have a little dog, a little Chihuahua Terrier mix, and he'll sit there with her, and she'll play music, and he'll sing. You know, he literally will go, so, you know, each day that's sort of our little moment of connection, because that is sort of still her grasp on what little reality she has left.
That's just so powerful and so interesting, because when we think of relationship, we think it's about communication and the bigger things. But in situations such as yours, you know, it's about the touch. It's about that glance. It sounds like it's that look, those moments, that really, really, that sense of spirituality that's deepening the relationship.
Yes. Yeah, I think a lot of times we've become in modern times so fixated on, you know, we've got to talk, we've got to communicate, we've got to talk about our feelings. And those things are important. But I think just being present, just sitting in the room, just being quiet. You know, my mother always told me her favorite Bible verse is, be still and know that I am God. And that's such a powerful thing to just be still, just to be present in the moment, no matter how bad it may be, but just be there with that person at that given time.
That's a great lesson. And it sounds like there's a lot of things going on in that particular relationship, and you actually it seems like you're managing to look at the important things within a relationship. Like you mentioned, it's not communication. There's so many different things that one can do to connect as human beings.
Yes.
But what has been the most difficult part for you being a caregiver?
I think probably the most difficult part is the, for me, and this may sound, mm-hmm. you know, wrong or whatever, but for me the most difficult part is the actual physical activity of taking care of somebody. You know, mm-hmm. I don't want to say it's a gender thing, but, you know, I'm just not attuned to taking care of people. You know, I was single, you know, for many, many years. So coming into this situation, you know, just being able to learn how to comb my mother's hair or pick out her clothes or, you know, break down that barrier of having to make sure she is bathed for the day. I mean, those are things as a child, as a parent, you know, you always think of your parent as taking care of you. So, you know, my mother's seen me naked, you know, thousands of times.
Right.
She's changed my, you know, underwear. But to, you know, break through that sort of barrier of propriety with your parent, like, okay, I'm going to see my mother in her most vulnerable, you know, time period, when she has to use the bathroom, when she gets sick, when she's throwing up, I'm going to have to physically do these things. So for me, that's been the most sort of trying and hardest to sort of negotiate.
Interesting. It's like the child becomes the parent, if you will, you know, and human development, that's something that we're taught, right? Well, this is what, let me teach you when this happens, because it's not part of our vernacular. It's not something that we were taught or even, you know, people think of. This is something that I need to really think about, because it's going to happen. It's just, you know, there is no manual for caregiving. Now, you mentioned that this is, you know, in terms of, you know, caring for her in the physical aspect of bathing her and making, combing her hair, which I think is fantastically beautiful.
And I tell people that, you know, people always say, oh, well, it's like taking care of a baby. And I'm like, no, you know, a baby has little caca, an adult has a whole lot more, you know.
It's a little bit different. It's a bigger body. It's interesting because, you know, developmentally, particularly with Alzheimer's and even people, older people in generally, you know, that they do revert to a lot of childlike behaviors in terms of, it's a completely different, you know, it's a developmental thing. Yeah. So what does your support system look like in terms of for you and helping you with the situation of being a caregiver?
Well, I think for me, I've been really, really lucky that I have a really good support network of friends. You know, my friends in New York. I have people here in North Carolina. My cousins live right next door, so they were, like, invaluable when I lived in New York. I mean, they would come over here. They'd make sure my mother had food. They would come check on her. You know, they, helped me out a lot. And just most of the people that I know have been just really, really very understanding. And I think that a lot of times that is what you need in a support system. They may not understand the physical, you know, act of caregiving. They may not understand when I call and I'm like, let me tell you what my mother did today. Good. You know, they may not understand that, but just them being there to listen, just them being there prepared to hear me vent, to cheer me up, to say, oh, well, Daryl, you know, you're doing a good job, or to laugh with me or find humor in something that you've done. I mean, that's just a huge, huge relief to me. And what I found is that being a caregiver is one of those sort of almost selfless kind of things people don't talk about. And when I started talking about my mother, I had so many people say, oh, Daryl, I'm in the same situation like Sandy. You know, he and I were having a conversation one day about a blog I had written, and he called me and he was, oh, my God, I'm going through the same thing that you're going through, but I have two parents. You know, so many people opened up, and I just wish we could be more open with being a caregiver, because it's natural. As we said at the beginning of the show, we're going to go through some stage of caregiving. So some of us, all four of those stages.
Right, right. It's interesting because, you know, it's like this, it's a difficult thing because I know I've been there, but I think that, you know, there's beauty behind it, and I think that it's almost type taboo, and people live in secrecy about this very important and honorable thing of caregiving that they're doing for a loved one. It is so honorable, but you're right. It's not something that people talk about and discuss. So that's why I find, you know, this show and individuals like you that write about it, I think it's fascinating, and I, you know, I acknowledge the fact that you're willing to do so, you know?
Yeah.
Now, I you know, and in speaking about it, talking about your friends and your support system, what routine or mechanism do you exercise in relation to issues of self-care for yourself?
Ooh. You know, like most caregivers, I mean, I think that a lot of times you sort of get into this routine where you're the caregiver, and when I say caregiver, I mean with the capital C, that you're taking
right.
care of this person, and that is your responsibility, and you're going to do that, and you're going to do that well, and you almost feel guilty if you have a laugh. You almost feel guilty if you have a glass of wine or a bottle, but I think that
right.
you have to find that luxury. You know, I think that you have to stop yourself and say, "I'm going to take this moment, even if it's a small bit. If it's that bubble bath, if it's that movie you want to see on Netflix, if it's that conversation you have with your friend you haven't spoken to in a while, if it's that, you know, one night a week you can sneak away to a movie or walk in the park or anything, you know,
right.
run with the dog, you know, anything you can, you know, sneak away and get that time alone and not, and what I tell people is don't feel guilty about that, because as a caregiver, you know, we feel like, oh, if I leave my mother for 10 minutes, the house may burn down, you know.
Right.
That's probably
it's not
going to happen.
Right. It's funny. And that's a segue into what I wanted to discuss with you regarding, you know, you mentioned guilt and these issues surrounding it. And I know that when I first approached you about, you know, coming in and speaking to individuals regarding this the show and this topic, I mentioned to you that a few years back, I was coaching a caregiver, and one of the eye-opening things that happened during our conversation and that I learned were the feelings that he felt towards his loved one, feelings that can be judged by others or maybe considered shameful or ungodly. For example, he served as a caregiver to many of his siblings, and they all had terminal illness, particularly mm-hmm. cancer. And he shared with me and was very candid a particular situation with one of his brothers that he was caring for. And he struggled mm-hmm. and struggled with the feelings of guilt because, you know, and this is going to sound harsh, but he wanted his brother to die. Or for the
mm-hmm.
death to
mm-hmm.
happen sooner, and I'm not saying that this is your case, but or for the death to happen sooner rather than later because he was hurting tremendously, seeing
mm-hmm.
his brother in pain. You know, he was an emotional wreck as well, and it took a toll on him. And I remember him telling me that it is inevitable that this is going to happen, right? It's a given. And why
mm-hmm.
go through the suffering? It was pretty intense stuff. And we've spoken a bit in the past about the overarching issue of guilt and the
mm-hmm.
other emotions attached to it, frustration,
mm-hmm.
anger, et cetera. But particularly
mm-hmm.
allowing yourself permission to own and feel what you're feeling, particularly with feelings that may be considered ugly. So talk to us.
Yeah.
We're going to segue. Talk to us a little about your experience and the importance of needing to own your thoughts and feelings irrespective of how others may perceive it. Talk to us a little about that.
Oh, that is such a powerful statement, because I think so many of us, we don't do that. And I think that that's important in not just caregiving, but in everyday life, to be able to own those feelings. I would say maybe about 8 years ago, I had a very, very good friend who moved from New York to Florida, and I hadn't seen for a while. You know, we still, you know, communicated, and I actually visited him in Florida. But there were several months that went by, and I hadn't heard from him. And he called me, and he said, oh, I'm back in New York. I'm sick. I'm at my mother's house. So the way he spoke, I felt like he sort of kind of indicated that he might have had the flu. Well, back to him, I realized it was more than the flu. And the thing that was so interesting was that when I went to go visit him for the first time, seeing him laying in his bed, skeletonized, I mean, he had lost so much weight, and he had AIDS, and the disease had just ravaged his body, and I remember being repulsed, and it was almost me having to fight that repulsion and saying to myself, you know, this is what it is. You know, fall into that feeling. It's okay. You know, we're not used to sickness. I mean, sickness is alien to us. I mean, we don't want to see people we love in pain. So it's okay to feel that repulsion. It's okay to feel that anger. You know, don't direct the anger at the person you're giving care, but find a way to deal with that. Sometimes I'm angry at my mother. I'm angry that she put me in this situation. I didn't ask for it. You know, I own that. Sometimes I'm repulsed with what's going on. I own that. And I think that when we don't feel the full range of emotion in life and in caregiving, you're robbing yourself, but you're also robbing that person. You're not giving them everything that they need and that you need.
So basically what I'm hearing is for you to own that, right, own these feelings, and as ugly as they may seem or they may be or may be considered, that you need to own that, because in turn what you're going to do is your approach towards that person is going to be that much more genuine, because you're being genuine,
right,
and authentic with yourself.
Yes. Because I found if you're not authentic, you know, in any relationship, a lover relationship, a parent relationship, a friendship, if you're not authentic, if you don't own all of your emotions, you're going to begin to resent that person. And what I found out in caregiving, especially in Alzheimer's, is that a lot of caregivers become resentful of the people that they're taking care of. And that doesn't, I mean, that's a bad situation for you and for them. Because you just won't be able to survive. You'll go crazy.
Right. Right. Okay, got it. All right, so if anybody wants to call in, any of the listeners, you can do so now at 646-716-9397. That's 646-716-9397. Now, Darryl, you know, I personally witnessed my grandmother succumbed to dementia, and it tore our family apart emotionally. A lot of members, we didn't know how to respond, particularly at that time, which was a while back, because we don't know much about the disease. And culturally, we didn't know what it was. And so our family members attributed the disease to the national progression of aging. Clearly, the diagnosis of dementia existed, but it was not a word that we used. And I will tell you that they were saying it comes with age, as you mentioned earlier. You know, but it really did tear our family apart emotionally. Some were angry, others were confused, and others were in denial, and some were frustrated, just a plethora of emotions. And, you know, I'm a Dominican male, and our family, we're pretty big. You know what I'm saying?
Uh-huh.
You could imagine the dynamics and everyone processing and owning whatever that they were owning. So tell me, along the same line, when one has a sick loved one, where the issue of mortality is on the table and end-of-life issues are concerned, it's often a family issue, but everyone, like I mentioned, copes with it differently. What can you tell me about how illness and issues in your particular played out in your particular family?
Well, I think I'm in an interesting position because my mother, like I said, was a business owner for many, many years. So she's always been a pragmatic person. So many, many years ago, she sat me down and she said, okay, this is my will. This is what I want to happen at the end of my life. You know, we filled out a HIPAA form so I could get all of her medical records. We did a power of attorney. I didn't want to talk about it at the time. You know, who wants to talk about their parent's death? But I think that a lot of times, because we are afraid of death, that talking about a living will or even a written will is in our mind psychologically, we're killing off that person. That, you know, that's not true. We have to get over that. I think in my family's case, the same situation that you sort of went through, you know, my cousin, one of my cousins, who's been a, you know, rock for me, but for a long period of time, he just couldn't understand what was going on with my mother. So he was short-tempered, and I think he thought that she was doing purpose And I think it took him watching me interact with her to understand, you know, just be patient, just, you know, that she can't help herself. She can't help herself. But my advice to people is bite that bullet. You may not want to talk about it. They may not want to talk about it. But, you know, get all that done with your parent while they are still in their sound mind, because it becomes infinitely, and I'm sure you know, infinitely more difficult once they start slipping. I mean, it just becomes infinitely more difficult. And you would not want to have to deal with the power of attorney with someone who is demented. You know what I'm saying? I mean, you know, a lot of times dementia leads to paranoia. It leads to people forgetting where things are located, you know, where the family jewels are. So you don't want to do it, but just...
The family jewels, I love that.
For those
that have them, right?
Exactly. Mommy, you told me I was getting the diamonds. So, you know.
But it's interesting, you mentioned that, and we're laughing, but, you know, advanced directives and all these things are so important, and I think our aversion to death, particularly our loved one, is so huge in our culture, in our country, that we fail to really address it head on while we can. Yeah. I have worked with a plethora of family members. You know, I work with senior for so many years. And when it does happen, is they just running around, they're just, you know, they're you know, you're coping with the death. Then you have to deal with the preparation. Then, everything is at once, you know, where preparation is something that, if it's done at the right time, would have left so much space and time for them to really focus on what's happening, you know. But yeah, it's something that people don't want to confront. The fact that, you know, the only constant, the only thing that is going to happen, the only guarantee, except for those who have jewels in the family, is that, you know, death is going to happen, people.
Yep.
You
it
know,
is, it is the, it is the constant shadow in our life, whether we want to face it or not. I mean, that's a lot of things that we personally have to deal with. But as you said, I would rather have all of that taken care of, and I can focus on my caregiving or grieving or whatever, than doing that plus trying to figure out all this other, you know, like you said, mechanical stuff. I mean, that would just be too much.
Understand. Now, you know, how have you managed to create, to the extent possible, a sense of normalcy for your mom, given the disease?
Oh, that's a good question. I think that for me, what I found is just how, it just, you know, get a routine and sort of stick to it. You know, we get up, we eat breakfast, you know, we watch a program, basically the same program, you know, so I just find out that just keeping a simple, straightforward routine, keeping conversation simple, let that person, you know, do the leading. And I think that ends up, for me, being the best and the easiest, to not fight the process.
And, you know, I haven't even asked you the most important question of the evening. What is your mother's name?
Oh, her name is Gwendolyn J. Stewart.
Sounds like an important woman. Gwendolyn J. Stewart. Okay.
Hey, you have to put that J period up in there.
Yeah, I know, that's right. So listen, I am enjoying the fact that you know, we're bringing some lightness into a very serious situation. Sometimes it's just the thing to do. And I know that you mentioned to me, which was very admirable, I remember when you were living in New York City, and we shared similar friends, and I would ask about you, and it was like they would tell me that you would be in North Carolina, and you're flying back, and it seemed like a lot, right?
It was a lot.
How has the caregiving process changed your life?
Well, now that I'm physically here in North Carolina, to be honest, it saves me a lot more money. Because I think a lot of times, it's true, I think a lot of people don't realize taking care of somebody is expensive, you know, and that's a whole side issue politically about how I think we look at seniors and the aged, you know, from a political standpoint in our country, but that's a whole other different topic. But, you know, taking care of somebody getting old, having, you know, a disease like Alzheimer's is very expensive because it's not, it's a debilitating disease, but it doesn't require you to have to run back and forth to a doctor like, say, for example, like a cancer or something like that. Well, as a person gets, you know, more and more impaired, you know, other sicknesses, as you know, and illnesses come on. But just, you know, having to take off work, having to find someone to take, you know, my mother, I applied for Medicaid for her, and they said she made too much money. So when I was living in New York, I had to hire a private sitter to come and stay with her. That was $18 an hour. So, you know, so flying back and forth, paying a sitter, you know, making sure she had food. She couldn't pay her own bills. And up until 82 years old, my mother was working, believe it or not. My mother was working.
Wow.
Yeah, up until 82. Wow. And like her, I mean, like all of us, she got laid off during the recession. She was a music teacher. So the school that she was working for, you know, they couldn't afford to pay a music teacher. So she lost her job. So just the inordinate amount of money that I was spending, I can truly say that now being here physically, it gives me a little more breathing room. That's just one less thing I have to, you know, worry about.
Right. Well, you know, on the back end, and we can have, I don't know if you research it also for the listeners, there are ways, and there is a way for individuals. There's no such thing as making too much money. There is a way qualifying. Of course, you know, if you're a millionaire, that's a little different story, which money is not an issue. There are ways to get Medicaid in this country for the middle class, the working class, the upper middle class. There are ways to do that, and there are loopholes that I'll be happy to share with you on the back end discussion.
I think that would be great, because a lot of people, I didn't know about those until I got in this situation. So I think that that's some information that would be, people would really, you know.
Yeah. And, you know, towards the, you know, at the end of the show, we're going to give each other's information, and you know, there are ways, like, you know, and if you don't work within the Asian community, if you are not in this situation where you're at, if you don't do your own research, if you don't work for the Asian community, then you probably, you know, don't know how to do that, simply because it benefits the government. And usually when that happens, it's not something that they're going to put in a commercial. You know what I'm saying? They're not going to take not going to take an advertisement out in the Daily News or the New York Times simply because Medicaid is government funding. And because it's government funded, if they market it and advertise it, clearly they're tapping into their reservoir of funds. But yes, definitely more than happy to do that. And, you know, for the listeners, absolutely. You know, when I give out my information at the end, feel free to email me and contact me. I'll be more than happy to guide you with that. Now, what would you – and let me just backtrack a little bit. So the issue of what I found also is that the issue of institutionalization is something that it's a hot topic or a hot button for many people that are caregivers. In your experience, was that ever a consideration?
Now, say that again. What did you say?
I'm saying, when I say institutionalization, I mean nursing home. Was that ever a consideration on the table?
That's a good question. For me, not yet, no. I don't know if it was is just my personality that I wanted to step in, but that was something I didn't entertain. I always kind of had the idea that I would probably live in a residence with her until she got to a point that I couldn't take care of her.
Right.
And I think that a lot of people, again, going back to the guilt thing, is that a lot of people sort of feel guilty over that. But I tell people, you know, when they say, oh, I would never do that, or so, you know, I'm like, look, let's be realistic. Being a caregiver is no joke. I mean, it is time consuming. It's hard. It's emotional. You know, it's not for everybody.
it's a very personal, individual decision not to be judged.
Yes.
By anyone.
Yeah, not to be judged. Not to be judged.
Not to be judged.
Yeah, perfect.
You know.
Yes.
Because mm-hmm. it's interesting because you know I have I had clients or people I worked with that did put their parents in a nursing home, and there is on the back end a lot of chatter around that. I can't believe she did this, or I can't believe he did that. In our culture, we don't do that. You know, it's a lot of judging around it, you know, without really knowing that, you know, it's a very, just to make the decision, to come to that decision is a hard one to even do that. And, you know, I think that the people listening out there, it is an extremely difficult decision, and it's a very, very personal one not to be judged. Now, what would you tell someone that is experiencing a similar situation with a loved one? You know, what kind of nuggets or what can you offer them?
You know, I would just say, and it may sound cliched, but I would just say just take it one step at a time. One thing that I do tell people when people email me after they read my blogs or whatever, I always tell them the thing that I am good at and I feel that I'm pride myself on is doing research. When I first suspected dementia, I read everything that I could. And with that research, it sort of armored me. It sort of gave me a sort of a coding that when things started happening, I kind of already knew what was coming. Oh, okay, this is the next stage. This is the next stage. So with any kind of caregiving, any kind of disease, any kind of situation, there are tons of medical information out there. You know, just do your research. You know, find medical history, read books, read blogs, read anecdotes, talk to people, because the more information you have, I think it sort of demystifies and sort of takes the horror out of the caregiving process.
So to basically educate yourself on the actual issue.
Yes.
So destigmatize some of it.
Yes, perfect. Perfect word. Destigmatize, demystify, you know, because at the end of the day, you know, I had a someone who I've been corresponding with, and his mother just passed away a couple of months ago from Alzheimer's. She was 92, and he emailed me and he said, oh, you know, Alzheimer's is such a cruel disease. And I told him, I said, I try my best not to ascribe, you know, things like that to natural, you know, to the natural world, you know. I try not to say Alzheimer's is cruel because it's a disease. You know, my mother didn't mean to get it. It just happened, you know. So that's what we have to deal with. You know, it wasn't done on purpose. There's not a curse out there. There's not someone with a voodoo doll with her into her head. You know, it just happened.
Right. It's not like someone is willing for this to happen. All the willpower behind it. Now, what role does your faith, if any, play in your situation as being a caregiver?
Well, that's a really good question. And I think that people tend to think of faith as, as sort of almost abstract, like, oh, well, you know, God will take care of it. But I think that you have to really believe that it's going to be okay. You know, whether you are a religious person, whether you're a spiritual person, you know, just that belief that it's going to be okay and that, you know, it may have been bad this morning and it may get worse tomorrow, but, you know, I like to look at life as a spectrum. You know, across that wide spectrum, you're going to have good things happen to you, you're going to have bad things that happen to you, but just the mere fact of living, of exhaling breath, of going through life, just experiencing this process, you know, is amazing. You just have to look at it as an amazing process. And I remember I was telling you about my friend earlier who had AIDS. Mm-hmm. You know, I saw how people disappeared out of his life. They wouldn't come visit him. You know, he was a very lively person. He had tons of friends. And right there at the end, it was his mother and me and one other person. And, you know, so many people were horrified by what happened to him, but I remember I went to go see him the day before he died in the hospital. And, you know, maybe I'm weird, but I just felt so honored and so blessed. I'm actually getting a little emotional, that I was there to help him transition, you know, from life to, you know, wherever we go. And I think you just have to look at it, you know, you just have to have that faith that everything is going to be okay.
And it's so interesting. I mean, the, you know, everything in life is what lens we choose to look through it. And, you know, you choose to look through the lens of you were honored to be part of that transition process as opposed to not being there where some people just, you know, stay away from situations And you know the thing, and I love the fact that you mentioned, you know, that you know you with faith, you alluded to the fact that you can have faith. Faith and fear cannot coexist. You know what I'm saying? It's either you have faith or you're fearful. You have to choose how you want to live. You know how you want to perceive the situation. You can't say, well, I believe in God or the universe, and I'm faith-based person or spirituality, but then you live your days living in fear and negativity and questioning. You know, it's like there's no way for that to coexist. Now, you know, last time when I spoke to the two individuals regarding the caregiver, they asked me the same question because I think it's very powerful. You know, and I read in an interview with Brené Brown. She's the author of this book. Michelle had a talk on TED Talk on vulnerability, and she, Brené Brown, she's the author of Daring Greatly, and she's researched vulnerability for over a decade, and she said that faith without vulnerability equals extremism, which to me was very, very powerful, and extremism eludes the fact that one knows it all and has all the answers. What role did vulnerability or not having the answers play out for you, if at any time, and how did you cope with it?
That's a powerful statement. I think that for me, just being able to, like I said before, do that research and realize I don't have all of the answers. And you know, and on a personal note, I've always sort of been the kind of jump-in kind of person. You know, I know people, you know, approach situations differently, but I've always sort of jumped into things because I kind of feel like they're going to end up okay. And I feel like if I get hurt, I get hurt. If I lose something, I lose it, you know. But better for me to have done that, you know, risk than not do it at all, you know. So I feel, you know, it's like you go out and you meet somebody or you're on a, you know, you meet somebody, you're like, oh, this person is interesting. I get the little butterflies. A lot of people get afraid at that point because they're like, oh, if I like this person, I become vulnerable, then I get out of control. It's all about control for us. And I think once you release that control, then that's when things actually begin working more in your favor. Because I think the more you try to control that stuff, the universe is going to say, no. You know, I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. So you have to make yourself open and vulnerable. Because if you don't, you're just missing out.
Right. It's like you can't control everything, and vulnerability is a part of really living life and letting you know life take its course. You know, when you try to control something and try to be in control of everything, it's kind of like, you know, the karmic energy of the universe will work against you, because if you try to, you know, control something, or particularly your destiny, then it can be very troublesome. So I can see and agree with your statements regarding vulnerability.
Yeah, you're absolutely right about that.
Now, what gifts have you received by being a caregiver, you think?
I think for me, the greatest gift is the sort of reconnection with my mother. You know, we've had sort of an interesting relationship. You know, of course, you know, when you're a child, you rely on your parents to the fullest. And, you know, my mother always was, you know, sort of, she always wanted me to be independent. I always tell people my mother was a tough love kind of girl. I mean, you know, she's mm-hmm. like kick the birdie out the nest kind of person. So we went through a period of time where our relationship was very strained. Then it sort of came back to another time period where we sort of respected each other on an equal footing. And now that I'm her caregiver, I think it's come, you know, full circle where I'm finally beginning to say, okay, you know what? I don't understand her. I don't understand why she did some of the things that she did, but I'm going to accept her fully for who she is because, you know, this is who she is. She's human. I'm human. And I think that gift for me is the greatest gift, to see her as a real, actualized person, as a fully functioning human being with flaws, with great potential, with, you know, beautiful things and, you know, scary things.
Mm-hmm. So it's basically...
And that's such a beautiful gift to be able to accept somebody fully for who they are. You know, I go through life and I try my best to accept people in the space that they're in. And I think that that's been a gift that I've been given all my life. You know, I try not to be judgmental. And, you know, people have told me over the years that they feel safe around me because I'm not a judgmental person. So, you know, for me to finally be able to extract that gift from my mother, but also give that back to her, give my right. unconditional love, give my non-judgmental love back to her, you know, I think that it's just, you know, a wonderful thing.
You have a very big, brave, and brave heart, and mm-hmm. because accepting, and it sounds like what you have done, the decision, right? Because everything is a choice, right? We have always that choice.
Yeah.
We have a choice of what we eat, what we put on, how we socialize. Everything that we do is a choice. So you have been, it sounds like you have made a choice to accept your mother in totality. For everything and anything that she is and everything that she is not, your journey with her has been an acceptance of her in totality.
Yes.
And that's a beautiful thing.
I love that.
Thank you. Try to pick my words.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you.
Listen, so, you know, in relation to your caregiver role, you know, and I know that we're beginning to wrap up, you know, what do you know? You know, I have a little Oprah moment, right? You know, in relation to
are you about to give out a car or a trip to Australia?
No. maybe on the next show. But yeah, that's definitely on my vision board. It is definitely coming around, giving out cars, jewels. But in relation to just our discussion and everything we've discussed today, and your role and the sacrifices, and faith and guilt, emotions, all this conversation in totality, what do you know for sure?
What I know for sure is that my time, my mother's time, all of our time is finite, and we need to do the most with that time that we can.
Beautiful. I like that word, finite. And that is definitely true. You know, you got to live every day as if it was your last.
You
got to
live every
day.
Yes.
Someday,
don't do anything
silly,
but.
Right.
Absolutely not. Everything in moderation. You know,
from the glass of wine or the bottle, just in moderation. But, yeah, right. Well, listen, Darryl, I honestly and seriously, I've had fun today. I really want to thank you for being with us tonight and for being so generous and candid with your personal story. I know that issues such as this one are difficult to talk to about, talk about. And for that, I thank you. Do you want to leave the listen? Absolutely. You're very welcome. I'm honored to have you. I'm on the show. Do you want to leave the listeners with that, how they can contact you? I know you're a writer, or do you have a website, or they can find your creative work?
If you go to Facebook and just look up my page, Daryl T. Sturgis, or Daryl Sturgis, I have a link to my blogs and my novels on my Facebook page. So, and then also, if you just want to, you know, give me a message on Facebook or email me, at Daryl,
can you spell it out?
D-A-R-Y-L at DarylSturgis.com. That's DarylSturgis.com. So Facebook, or if you just want to email me, if you want to comment about the blogs, if you just want to talk, I mean, I have a lot of times people, you know, message me on Facebook and say, you know, I'm facing this situation with my parent. I would love to hear from you, because the more we can work together, I think the better the process will be.
Great. Fantastic. So thank you again. Please reach out to him
if
you need to. Thank you. So as for me, you have any questions? Or I know we talked about the Medicaid issue, and a lot of people in this country do not qualify, but there are ways to get that Medicaid. And what that means is that you will be covered in totality, will help with those bills, right? Those medical bills. But as for me, you can reach me at info@josealbinolifecoach.com. That's info@josealbinolifecoach.com. You can visit my website and send me a message through there at www.josealbinolifecoach.com. You know, this platform for me, you know, it's a labor of love. You know, it's having individuals, ordinary individuals who are extraordinary in their own way, but sharing their extraordinary stories for the listeners, because and serving as a sense of inspiration. You know, one of the things that I always say in this show is that even if someone got an aha moment, like, oh my God, I really didn't think about it that way, or, you know, I never considered that caregiving or whatever issues that we're talking with that are on the table, that if you just came out saying, wow, I never thought about it that way, and having that aha moment, I feel that I did something positive for humanity. But again, this is the platform for me, the labor of love, and I'm glad you chose to listen. I'd like to please look out for future updates from me through my LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, or email blast, because I will be doing future shows in Espanol. I sounded like, what is it, Bloomberg, when he speaks Spanish, butchering up my language. My language. So, yes, man, I will soon be co-hosting and hosting shows in Spanish for the American and international market at the International Radio Coach Network. So, Greg, thank you, Daryl. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you. Thank you all. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Absolutely. Thank you all for listening. Until next time, and always remember that those that got to where they are began where they were. So whatever you want to accomplish, big or small, simply take a small step and take action. It's not that hard, I promise. Have a good night.